you believe. Assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Good morning and welcome to the show, everyone. I hope everybody had a good Independence Day. Last week I came on the show and I professed, you know, I wasn't so sure if I was going to celebrate Independence Day. And I got to thinking about it. When good figures from history pass away and we celebrate their birthdays or some event dealing with them in history, that doesn't mean that the event didn't happen or they weren't good people. So I decided, you know, I'm going to celebrate Independence Day. We are certainly not anywhere near as independent as our founding fathers would have had. That document called the Declaration of Independence has really gone by the wayside. When we have a current sitting president, the Bahrainian candidate who got elected, and he says that Americans have too many liberties, and we've had too many liberties for too long, what's that tell you? That tells you he is bad for America. And I can honestly say I've gone through my history, and I don't know if we've ever had a president who was bad for America, for Americans. We've had bad presidents. We've had presidents that didn't do a very good job. Let's throw Jimmy Carter in there. Let's throw George W. Bush in there. Let's throw, you know, his dad wasn't that great. Clinton certainly sucked. Ford wasn't that good. Nixon wasn't that strong. There's hardly any good presidents that have been in there recently in the last few decades. But one that was literally bad for America, bad for Americans, was the Bahrainian candidate in the name of Barack Obama, who now fills the seat, unconstitutionally, might I add, having been born in Kenya. So when we've got a president that says Americans have too many liberties, and we have enjoyed too many liberties for far too long, what's that tell you? Tells he's got a mission to curb those liberties. Can you imagine? Were we so stupid as Americans? Now, I would doubt that too many people listening to this radio show probably voted for Barack Obama. But when I say we, I'm talking about the country as a whole, all the other citizens, the other, you know, 300 million of us. So stupid as to buy all of that Bolshevik rhetoric like they did when Hitler became Chancellor of Germany and spent 2 years, only 2 years, aligning the rest of his power before he firmly took control. We're like 6 months into this presidency. What, another 18 months and that's where we're going to be? We really need to look at getting a recall going here. This is terrible. Terrible. Even the most happy-go-lucky Obama supporter has got to look at this and say there's no way that the country can get out, at least if they have any brains in their head at all. There's no way that the country can get out of this. Anyhow, I digress. With that in mind, because of what the founding fathers did and what those men went through after signing the Declaration of Independence, we celebrated Independence Day. I did what I think was a very good Independence Day show. You can go to 2aradio.com, go to the archives page, and listen to it. And I hope you enjoy if you weren't able to hear it so far. We've got plenty of things going on around the country that I'm going to talk about today. A couple things that went on with me over the weekend and possibly the way you can benefit over a couple of things. So stay tuned through the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Rule 1, assume it's loaded. Rule 2, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3, listen to the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
So at home, I do some hand loading of ammunition. I don't really want to see reloading so much because generally I'm using brand new components. And one of the rifles that I hand load for is the 416 Remington Magnum. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar, 416 Remington Magnum is one of those African cartridges for the Big Five. On North America, you could hunt any of the following. You could hunt large elk or moose, buffalo, or bear, especially something large like the Kodiak bear, which is the largest bear in the world. So the 416 Remington Magnum, I got this gun with the scope on it. It's a Remington 700 action. It's got a Swarovski 1.5-4 power scope on it. It is the scope that African hunters for Big Five want. It is the exact scope that they strive for. I got this whole package. I got it on a deal from a friend of mine who used to come out and train with me. And then after I got the gun, I realized that the rounds are between $5 and $8 a piece. This is a couple years ago when I got the gun. Now the rounds are upwards of about $10 to $12 a piece. The reason being that ammunition manufacturers are concentrating on the very popular, more defense type rounds right now when it comes to manufacturing. They're not getting into a lot of the wildcat things such as that. They're doing some hunting rounds. They're doing a lot of defense rounds. But they're not getting into more of the specialty rounds. 416 Remington Magnum is one of them. It's a difficult round to find when you can. So a lot of people hand load it, which is what I do. And as it turns out, I ended up with way more brand new empty shell casings than I could use. When I'm said and done, when I've got all of the ammunition loaded for this gun, I'm going to have somewhere around 300 rounds for it. I've yet to even fire a round out of the gun itself, because I haven't had a reason to, but I am keeping some rounds to the side to do some sight-in on the thing and get a feel for it. But I ended up with a whole bunch. I was doing inventory on a bunch of my casings and such over the weekend, and I found that I had about an extra couple hundred casings for this 416 Remington Magnum. So I ended up putting them up on GunBroker, see if they can go from there. There's a few different people that sell 416-related items on there. A lot of them are 416 Rigby. There's even something from a 416 Taylor good round. But the Remington Magnum, 416 Rem Mag, that's actually what it was. Is a 375 H&H Magnum necked up to accept a 416 caliber bullet. From 300 to 400 grains. Most of them are 350 to 400. So if anybody happens to load that round and you're interested in any of those casings, I've got some listed. I think the auction numbers, it's just ones and threes. It's like 1-3-3-3-1-3-1-1-3 or something like that. And if you have any interest in knowing a little bit about that particular round and why I chose 416 Remington Magnum, you can shoot me off an email, and I will cite my sources on it. Just all around good, solid caliber. It doesn't have quite the kick of, say, like your 458 lot or some of your Weatherby rounds, but it's certainly bigger than the 375 H&H, which a number of professional hunters have said is, even though it's technically and legally the bare minimum to shoot the Big Five in Africa, it's really not up to the task, so carry something bigger. A lot of research that I have done has sent me over to the 416 Remington Magnum, and I was just lucky to find my friend Ken actually available to, you know, he was getting out of the gun. I wanted to get into it, so there we go. Someday I'll actually go out and shoot the thing after I've loaded a couple hundred rounds for it. It's been kind of a backwards process. I want to cite a reference book that's out there and available used on Amazon.com. This is the book that really got me understanding all about the rifle. And it's called The Book of the Rifle. It's written by a guy by the name of Jim Carmichael. Jim Carmichael spent decades, I'm not even sure, he may still be there, as the shooting editor for Outdoor Life magazine. Jim's written a lot. He's certainly edited a lot. And he wrote the book called The Book of the Rifle back in the late 80s or early 90s. It's been out of print for some time, but it is a fantastic read. And it is, if you're a rifleman, or you want to be a rifleman, or you want to be a better rifleman, it is the Bible that you must not go without. A good friend of mine in Las Vegas, who retired after 33 years on Las Vegas Metro, a guy by the name of Steve Franks, Steve told me about this book years ago, and he lent me his copy out of his own library. And I took the next 2 or 3 weeks to read this book in my spare time. I was so impressed with this book. About halfway through, I went onto Amazon, I found it, and I ordered it. And I ordered a copy that was in pristine condition and had been autographed by Jim Carmichael himself. Now, Steve's book had been gone through. Several people had read it. It had a bit of wear, but it wasn't in bad shape by any means. It had just had a bit of wear. When I got this new book in, the one that I ordered off of Amazon, the one that had been signed by Jim Carmichael, I was impressed by the condition of this book. It was in wonderful condition. So rather than give Steve his book back and then me hold on to this nice pristine one that had been autographed by Jim Carmichael, I gave Steve the nicer autographed book. And as thank you for having turned me on to such a wonderful and fantastic reference, this book talks about everything. We're talking about materials used in guns. We're talking about different stocks, stock materials, stock designs. There is talk about progressive rifling, barrel lengths, burn rates within these different lengths of barrel. There's an entire chapter on African rifles. There's an entire chapter on North American game rifles. There's a chapter on going prairie dog and shooting it at varmints with varmint rifles. It's just absolutely amazing, full of information. Jim Carmichael, in his own right, is an educated guy. He knows a lot about engineering and physics, so he is an authority to be able to write on these subjects. And he does get a little technical on some of the things, but as soon as he does, he then breaks it down so anybody can understand it if you don't quite have the engineering or physics or technical background into such a thing, so even when it comes to machining or woodworking. A lot of history involved, and a lot of different tests that had gone on to either solidify a theory or to blow the holes into a theory, such as progressive rifling, as an example. Talks about the smooth bore of the old muskets when they first went to a single ball going through these guns. It's just a wonderful, wonderful book. Very interesting read. And when you're done with it, it becomes a reference manual for certain things. Once you're done with the whole deal, you want to go back and look up things for varmint rifles or for going through the looking for a gun for African plains or even the Big Five. Another excellent reference. Pull it off the shelf. Reread that chapter. It is fantastic. He shares a lot of personal stories in there. If you can go to Amazon.com and look it up, The Book of the Rifle by Jim Carmichael, starts with a C. And I'm sure you'll enjoy that. Jim Carmichael got together with another fella, and I don't recall his name. They developed a wildcat round called the 22 Cheetah, C-H-E-E-T-A-H. And the C and the H are both capital, because the other guy that Jim Carmichael worked with, his last name started with H, so that it's capitalized to homage the two of them. The 22 Cheetah is a 22 caliber round that would fire in, say Remington 700, some sort of varmint rifle, 22 caliber varmint rifle, that with a 1 in 16 inch twist achieved something like 4,600 feet per second muzzle velocity, which is unbelievably fast. I mean, just unreal. Very, very impressive. And accurate as the day is long. Just very interesting stuff. I ended up buying a Remington 700 E-Tronix rifle in 22-250. And I figured if I ever shoot the throat out of that thing, I will probably have the barrel rechambered to 22 Cheetah and have an electronic firing 22 Cheetah just to be different. I have no problem in having the occasional unique gun here and there. That's okay with me. It's more the defensive hardware that I'm not willing to experiment with very far. I don't want to go so far outside of the box that if I need to grab another rifle for parts or repair, I'm not out of luck because there's nothing out there. So anyhow, The Book of the Rifle by Jim Carmichael. If you're interested in bench rest shooting, by the way, he's got a wonderful story in there about an incredibly windy day in Tucson, Arizona, back in the 80s, when he pulled out a 220 Swift, and just a stock 220 Swift, which is not generally looked at as a bench rest gun or bench rest caliber. However, Jim knew that it was not affected nearly as much by the wind on this incredibly windy day as most of the other rounds out there. Now, Jim didn't win. He did come in second that day, and he goes through the entire story. And the interesting thing is, whoever won has probably been long forgotten, but that Jim Carmichael came in second with a pretty well stock 220 Swift, that's what people remember, a non-standard caliber that he brought out on a windy day, because that caliber is inherently affected far less by the wind than many of the other rounds that are out there in bench rest competition today. A little bit more coming for you. We are going to do a little bit of a roundup, what's happened around some of the states, in the next segment when we return. So stay tuned. This is Bill Carnes on 2A Radio. Have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, live, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. And welcome back from the break. The state of Arizona has some 127,000 concealed weapons permits in that state. And I believe there's just shy of 2 million people living there. So a decent, respectable number of people there have concealed weapons permits. You don't need them. It is an open carry state, and a lot of people in Arizona do carry open. On the occasion that I'm in Arizona, I am packing all the time, and oftentimes I am carrying open. And the legislature in Arizona, they have since come to the end of their session this last Friday, and there's a few bills pending on Governor Jan Brewer's desk for her to sign or veto. One of them sitting on her desk that passed both houses of the legislature in Arizona is to allow people to carry concealed in bars and restaurants that serve alcohol. Now, a lot of people are really up in arms over this. Just so you know, 40 of the 50 states allow this. There's two states that don't because you can't carry there. There's 8 states that have some provision of concealed weapons, whether it's curbed or it's actually good. It's a shall issue or a may issue. Regardless, there's only 8 states that don't. I guess Arizona's been number 9. We'll see if Governor Brewer actually signs this bill. Indications are she probably will. But that allows you to carry a gun with you if you go into a restaurant that serves alcohol and you sit down and eat, or if you go into a bar. A lot of people say, oh, guns and alcohol don't mix, and we don't let people drive a car after they've been drinking. Why would we let them carry a gun? They're really missing it. Most people who carry a gun are not so stupid as to sit around and get lit while carrying a gun, especially if they've got a concealed weapons permit, because it takes quite a bit to get that. You got to go through a background check, you got to go through training, and there's a number of things you can do to get it revoked. And the people who carry those permits are painfully aware of that. They're generally more informed citizens, and generally the ones are a little bit more heads up about what's going on around them. And they're not just some foolhardy, haphazard situation getting into average Joe. They're generally a little bit more aware of things. Actually, they're generally speaking, they're quite a bit more aware of their surroundings and what's going on. They're more aware of their rights, and they're also much more aware of the responsibility that it takes to carry a gun. So we're looking at that. Arizona's also been considering going CCW-free. If you can legally own and possess a gun, then you can pack. And that's been something that's gone on in Alaska It's essentially kind of a mimic of their law. And I'm kind of interested to see how this goes, to see if the governor herself will actually do that. It's going to be interesting. I am a fan of the idea. In Nevada, we certainly can. We can certainly carry. So I appreciate that. In different areas around the country, there are different places where people can go and they can do some recreational shooting. Different places around the country are at risk of having these kind of a go-to, come-one-come-all areas where people are shooting for recreation closed down because people are not cleaning up their range mess. Those people who go take their old appliance out and dump it in an area with some relatively safe backstop and shoot it up and leave it there, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about people that go out there and they save all their old glass beer bottles and they set them up and they shoot them and they leave the glass out there. I'm talking about the people that take all their recyclable aluminum cans out and they set them up and they shoot those and they leave them out there. I'm talking about the people who don't police up their shotgun holes or their shell casings. That's what I'm talking about. Essentially, what turns into an open area where everyone can go and they can do some shooting, it turns into a dump that people shoot their old crap up. Televisions, microwaves, old cell phones that their ex-girlfriend used to have or something, whatever it is. That's what I'm talking about. It's an absolute mess. And the people that are going out there and doing that sort of thing, you've got to realize the cities, the counties, the states are going to close that area down because it becomes a hazard. And it's going to cost them to send workers out there to clean it up. So my advice to you, if you go out and you shoot, whatever you take with you, bring it all back, plus a little bit more of somebody else's. Maybe get together with several other shooters and go out there and do a big cleanup of the area so that you can keep it. You can show good faith that we're looking to take care of this area where we go shooting. There's an area not far outside of the little town limits of Pahrump here where I live that I have seen, but I wouldn't shoot there if it was the last place in the county to shoot. I would drive far and above other places to go because it is absolutely a dangerous mess of a dump where a bunch of redneck hillbillies have gone out there, dumped all their crap out of their old single-wide trailer that burned down, and started blasting at it with whatever sort of gun and ammunition they could get their filthy little greasy fingers on. It is disgusting. And I would be ashamed to be seen in that mess. That's the big deal. I would be ashamed to be seen in such a mess, shooting and training at the level in which I have dedicated myself to do it. If you are like-minded with me, get together with some other people, clean it up, get some signs made, post them in the ground, and say, look, please, leave this place in better condition than you found it. Riot of the Day coming up after the break. This is Bill Carnes on 2A Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network.
With Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
Let me tell you something. The difference between amateurs and professionals. Amateurs train until they get it right. Professionals train until they can't get it wrong. I want to thank a very good friend of mine, a guy by the name of Michael Perez, for giving me that short little snippet, that short little definition between amateurs and professionals years ago. Amateurs train until they get it right. Professionals train until they can't get it wrong. I say that because if you are going to carry a gun for a living, you are, by sheer definition, a professional. If you're getting paid to do something, you're a professional. Just by looking up the definition of professional in the dictionary. If you're not getting paid to do it, you are an amateur. However, I have to pre-qualify a couple of things here. If you're going to carry a gun outside of the home, if you're going to carry a gun, actually, if you're going to carry a gun, period, you should carry it as though you're getting paid to do it. You have to act under professional standards or above to be able to carry a gun in case the unfortunate incident occurs that you need to use it to defend your life or that of someone else. The riot of the day comes out of Fayetteville, Arkansas, where recently the police were called to a 26-year-old woman's house by the name of Jill Ulmer. She was being stabbed by her 41-year-old boyfriend, Ricky Anderson. When the police arrived, two cops, they take out their guns and they go to shoot Ricky Anderson. The suspect, who's in front of the officer's faces, stabbing his girlfriend, Jill Ulmer, potentially to death with this knife. They open fire. Ricky goes down. Jill is down. As it turns out, it was stray rounds from the officer's guns that did Jill Ulmer in. They were there trying to protect her by shooting Ricky Anderson, but had not trained up to the point where they were up to the task, and it ended up killing Ricky Anderson's intended victim, doing him a favor. Police also confirmed that Jill Ulmer was pregnant. That is the huge slap in the face. Why I chose this story to be the riot of the day. If you are in law enforcement, and part of your duty is to carry a gun, you would be responsible for this woman and her unborn child's death if that were you pressing the trigger in Fayetteville, Arkansas. You should not allow it to happen to you. You have no idea, folks, how many cops believe that their gun is just for show. The reason being, even in the academies of today, you will get the old curmudgeons in there that have said, in my 32 years of carrying a gun out here on the streets of Hoboken, I've never had to pull it in the line of duty, or I've never had to fire it in the line of duty. That's great. But I've got to tell you, with the degradation of society today, I flat guarantee you, anybody within the past decade and forward that's going to be a police officer or has gotten into the business and is going to be there through retirement time, 20 years or more, absolutely, positively will pull that gun in the line of duty. And a much higher percentage than ever before will be firing it in the line of duty. The days of old, the days of 30 years on the force, never even had to pull my gun out of the holster, are over. They've been over for the last 10 or 12 years. If you've been on the force that long and you've never pulled your gun out, in the last 10 to 15 years, that means you've been riding a desk or sitting in some administrative sort of position that has kept you off of the street. I guarantee it. Or you took over for Andy in Mayberry. That's all there is to it. Chances are you will be using that gun in the line of duty, not just pulling it out. Pulling it out's a given. And if it comes out, you'd better be prepared to use it. And on top of that, you'd better be proficient enough to use it. You better have trained so well that you can't get it wrong. Because otherwise, things are going to come down on you. If nothing else, these cops, if they don't get in trouble for this, for taking Jill Ulmer and her infant daughter, I'm sorry, her she was pregnant, right? So taking her fetus's life. They, and nothing else, have to live with that. Do you want to have to live with it? I hope not. I hope no one ever is faced with having to make, realize they made that mistake. I hope to God. That's just not the police, folks. That's you and I. You're getting attacked in a parking lot outside of a super center or Walmart or Home Depot late at night, whatever it may be. You've got to take your gun out and defend yourself because someone's, you're in fear of loss of life or serious bodily injury for yourself or someone that's with you. So you take out your gun and you shoot the bad guy. Or I should say you shoot at the bad guy. And if you miss, those rounds are screaming down range and they hit someone else. You've got to live with that. You shouldn't have to live with that. Other people shouldn't have to live with getting hit with bullets that weren't sent down range with their name on them. It was addressed to whom it may concern. Those are the bullets to look out for. If there's a bullet with your name on it, there's not much you can do about it. There's just not. But the ones addressed to whom it may concern are the ones to look out for. And if you're the one delivering those to whom it may concern bullets, then you shouldn't be carrying a gun. You should not be carrying a gun. And taking your old washing machine, your old beer bottles and your old soda cans out, maybe a watermelon and a couple of grapefruits, out to the dump that you call a range, and blasting holes in this stuff and woohoo, whooping it up, whooping and hollering with your buddies. I would like to ask of you to never carry those guns in defense. If you're just going to be a filthy pig about it, leave your guns at home. Leave them in the truck rack and don't take them out. Because if that's the type of a person that you are when it comes to being a gun owner, you're exactly the type of person that I don't need listening to this show unless you hope to change and upgrade your habits. Otherwise, turn the show off right now. I've got no interest in having that, which is the, it's what the people who are not gun owners or not active shooters, the perception that they have of gun owners in America. You know, missing a few teeth, Bubba and his buddies out there in their jacked up four-wheel drive pickup, whooping and holler, drinking beer and blasting every piece of trash that they drug out of the yard of their single wide. That's the perception of gun owners in America. And we've done it to ourselves by allowing that sort of thing to go on. All right? If you're going to carry a gun for self-defense, you've got to train to the point where you can't get it wrong. And going to your local indoor range and shooting at a bullseye target, leaning back in a crappy stance, mashing 4 out of 5 shots, ain't getting it done. If that's you, which is the average shooter out there, you've got to go get training. And don't go to somebody that you know who's a cop. Just because they have a badge doesn't mean they know how to shoot. Ask Jill Ulmer. She's dead now. You're going to have to Ouija board and seance her to ask her. But she could tell you that just because they have a badge doesn't mean they know how to shoot. Do not make that mistake. Some of the worst shots I know of are cops that are under the false belief because they have a badge and they went through some basic level of training at the police academy and they have to qualify anywhere between 1 and 4 times a year that they know how to shoot. Well, the fact is they know how to put their finger on a trigger, mash it to the rear, and hear the gun go bang. If that's shooting in their definition, then yes, they know how to shoot. If they know how to hit their target in a variety of lights, a variety of conditions, a variety of the any environmental condition that there is, to be able to identify and, if necessary, engage a hostile target with rounds from whatever gun they've got, be it a handgun, shotgun, or rifle, or submachine gun, depending on what job function you may have. If you're able to do that, then you've trained to the proper level. If you're not able to do that, then you haven't trained. I was eating lunch, maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago, with a good friend of mine who recently passed away in in April. A guy by the name of Mike Leone. Mike and I taught together out at Front Sight many years ago. He left the organization. He was a state of Nevada law enforcement officer. He worked in a couple different divisions within the state. His last assignment, he was with the Nevada Taxi Cab Authority. That's the group of cops that actually exist to go after taxi cabs, limo drivers, buses that come in, commercial buses that bring tours in and such. That's their job. And Mike was a great guy, just an excellent human being. One of the top guys I knew. One of the guys I would call if I needed reference or I needed clarification on something. One of the guys that had so much respect for me that I would call him on top of the hundreds of people that call me on, an annual basis for advice. Mike was one of the few people I would call for references if maybe something wasn't entirely clear with me, or I wanted somebody that I trusted to bounce some ideas off of. I'm sitting at a Marie Callender's restaurant with Mike, and we're having lunch, and he's in uniform. And a guy that I went to the police academy with years before came up to us. And he had been eating in there. He knew Mike, and he remembered me from the police academy. A guy by the name of Steve. I won't give out his last name. He works for Las Vegas Metro. He was a sergeant at the time, an admin sergeant, and he's on the lieutenant's list. So he was pretty much out of the field for the most part. He had just left to go out for lunch. But for the most part, he was an admin, above the beat cop sort of a guy. And I noticed in his holster, he had a Glock and he had night sights on it. Now, Las Vegas Metro will either issue you a crappy Smith & Wesson, 659, I think is their issue gun. Or they have a huge list of approved guns. You can give your gun to one of the guys at the range. They look at it. Okay, it's good. You go out and qualify with it. Okay, great. That's your duty gun. So you see a huge variety of guns that are out there, which I am fine with. I actually like the idea. So I looked at it, and I figure, all right, he's got a Glock. He's got night sights on it. Chances are, he probably knows a thing or two. So I said, hey, Steve, what do you have there? Is that a Model 22 Glock in your holster? He says, no, that's a Model 17, compensated, which means it's a 9mm with ports in the top of the slide and barrel to vent the gases so he doesn't get too much recoil out of a 9mm in a full-size handgun. There's negligible recoil to even be considered in any 9mm, let alone a full-size Glock. And he's got one that's compensated. So right then and there I knew he had no idea what he was doing. Defensive shooters don't carry compensated guns. Defensive shooters who know what they're doing do not carry compensated guns. Here was a cop. Career guy, obviously. He's on the lieutenant's list. I'm sure he's made lieutenant by now. He's worked the streets. He's worked traffic. He's been on, specialized on motorcycles. He's gone into admin. He should ought to know about this sort of thing. He's carrying a compensated 9mm Glock. So I offered him the opportunity to take a course, a 4-day course, free of charge. And he's, it's okay, because this thing is pretty much just for show. If I need to use it, I can pull it out and use it. But I'm admin now. I don't, really need that. And I looked at him, and I said, Steve, I've got three words for you. He said, really, what's that? I said, famous last words. I said, you just had a sergeant get killed in the line of duty who probably had the same thought in mind. And he rushed in on a guy who was firing a semi-automatic rifle at the police. And he got shot because he wasn't prepared. He didn't understand his tactics. He didn't know what he was doing. I said, you may find yourself in that position from the time you leave this restaurant and you arrive back at your office a good couple miles away. You may find yourself having to respond to that same call. And right this minute, you are not prepared. They said, I'm worried about that. So I stopped. I didn't bother talking to him about it anymore. He had already made up his mind. I wasn't going to sit there and waste my time. If I was able to call the sheriff and say, send Steve out for 4 days worth of training, pay him to do it, give him the ammo, I'll offer the course for free. Steve would still not have shown up. If he was paid to go with free ammo, he had absolutely no interest in it. Now that is the wrong attitude for both cops and people that carry on a regular basis for self-defense. That is the wrong attitude. And if you can't train so hard that you can't get it wrong, if you don't dedicate yourself to doing it, you don't have any business out there carrying a gun. Because someone other than the bad guy that you're defending yourself against is likely to soak up a round or more, or even several people might soak up some of your errant rounds. That is absolutely unacceptable. Unacceptable. So, this woman calls the police because her boyfriend's going nuts. By the time they show up, he's on top of her, stabbing her with a knife. They pull out their guns to shoot him, end up hitting her. The coroner says that it was the bullets, the gunshots from the police guns, that actually caused her death. So at that point in time, she had not been stabbed so much that she was unrepairable. They say that the bullets killed her from the cops, from her saviors. So did they do anybody any good? The answer is no. I am absolutely appalled that people who carry guns, whether it's for a living or for self-defense, do not put in the time and effort and the mental acuity for dealing with this sort of thing and don't train up to the level. They certainly should. More after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443. Uncle Sam taught him to shoot maybe a little too well. Finger on the trigger loaded.
We've all heard the phrase, freedom isn't free. In fact, it's not. Freedom comes at an incredibly high price. And we all pay for it, whether we realize it or not. Some pay more than others. Your liberties are quite expensive. Your inalienable rights are also very expensive. We've got to fight to keep these things. Because if we don't, even though they're in the Constitution, even though our Creator gave them to us at inception, that doesn't mean they can't be taken away, or they haven't been taken away in other parts of the world. And we must remain vigilant and fight. The best way I know of is to fight and lead by example. If you're one of the people who carries a gun for a living or carries a gun for self-protection, you must absolutely dedicate yourself in mind, body, spirit, and training to the absolute highest levels. I've said this before, let me say it again. Amateurs train until they get it right. Professionals train until they can't get it wrong. You need to be in Group B. You need to train like a professional to where you can't get it wrong. Imagine if you happen to be in a state which offers concealed weapons, and you have a permit, and you have the unfortunate experience of having to use that concealed weapon to defend your life or that of another who's in fear of loss of life or serious bodily injury, and it's a righteous shoot, and you do everything right, you've just gotten a tenth of a point up on the anti-gunners and the people who would like to do away with concealed weapons permits. If you do something wrong, you've gone a full point down. It takes 10 good ones to get to a single point and one bad one to erase 10 good ones. Do you understand? You've got to be in the best situation possible when it comes to your training and getting everything done right. That is then a banner that we can all hold up and wave and say, look, concealed weapons in the hands of honest, law-abiding, and trained citizens is a good thing, because police are not under any legal obligation to have to provide anyone in this country protection. Nor can you expect them to be there when the chips are down and the bad guys launch their attack. We've got to have the proper examples to show, look, this person did it, and they did it right. If you're going to be in a position where you need to use your gun to defend yourself, be in a position to do us all proud and get it done right. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Thank you for tuning in. Have a wonderful day.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.